Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
And LA Talk Radio, you are listening, of course, to your wonderful hostess with the mostest, Jim Christina. And I am sitting here looking at my good friend and business partner, Richard Polinelli in Fruta, Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
And Bobby Jean Bell in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello there, Bobby, and hello there, Richard.
Hey, Jim, how's it going?
It's slow, but it is steady, my friend.
Yeah. We noticed that, didn't we, Bobby? They were a little slow.
We did. We did. And we have Henry Park on the line, too.
Be gentle with me. I am, I'm getting old.
Oh, aren't we all?
Tonight, as you can tell by the opening music, this is going to be a specifically Western night. And without any further ado, we are going to begin our particularly Western night with our good friend and writer of Henry's Western Roundup, .blogspot.com, Mr. Henry Park. Hello, Henry.
Hello, Mr. Bugles in the Sun.
Hey.
Hey. Oh, and that was great music. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you can't beat Silverado. You just can't.
No, it's just lovely stuff.
It is great stuff. Yeah.
Well, it seems like the world is getting back to normal in baby steps, and I've got some great local news. Knott's Berry Farm, the great SoCal amusement park that grew out of a fruit stand in a ghost town, has reopened. My girls took me this weekend for my birthday, and we had a great time seeing shows, riding rides, strolling the ghost town streets, and mostly eating chicken.
I love it.
And so, as I say, it is open. Keep in mind, you have to buy your tickets in advance, and not everything is open quite yet. In particular, the railroad, the stagecoach, and the gold panning aren't happening yet.
Okay.
But the good news is, and I've never uttered this phrase before, there's an app for that.
Oh my God.
The Knott's app will tell you what the line wait is for each attraction, but also if an attraction is not listed, it's not open.
So you can
wait and make sure what you want to do most is there. Now, I told you last month that the Autry reopened.
Right.
Now you don't need a reservation anymore. And if you're fully vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. But their cafe is still closed. Other than that, I think everything is up and running.
Okay. The bookstore open and everything?
Mm-hmm. That's what I understand, yes.
Okay,
I haven't been there, but I'm going to be there next week, I'm sure.
Excellent.
Okay, and there's new Western stuff to see. On July 13th, the comedy series Miracle Workers, starring Harry Potter's Daniel Radcliffe and Stephen Buscemi, returns for season 3 on TBS, and this season it's all about the Oregon Trail. Now, do you know the series?
No.
I never even heard of it before, frankly.
Me either.
But it's about angels that are sent down to Earth to perform miracles and convince God not to destroy the Earth. It's based on the novel What in God's Name by Simon Rich, but to me it sure sounds like It's a Wonderful Life meets The Horn Blows at Midnight.
And, oh my God!
Which is not a bad thing, and the trailer looks good.
Not necessarily, no.
And it's Stephen Buscemi's first Western since Lonesome Dove.
Luke, that's right.
Yeah. Well, he did do a Disney cartoon thing where he played the voice of a cow, which is sort of rural, but I don't think it was really a Western. Idris Elba, I think that's how you say it, is a Brit. But he sure must love Westerns. Yeah. In 2017, he starred as a gunslinger in Stephen King's futuristic Western, The Tall Tower. In 2020, he starred in the contemporary Western, Concrete Cowboy, which got great reviews. And this fall, he'll be starring in his first historic Western, The Harder They Fall. Hmm. He plays Rufus Buck, and when his sworn enemy, Nat Love, played by Jonathan Majors, learns that Buck is getting out of jail, he pulls his gang together to run him down. It's a largely black cast Western, and most of the characters are based on real people. In addition to Buck and Love, there's Stagecoach Mary, Bill Pickett, Cherokee Bill, and Jim Beckwith.
Wow.
It's directed by James. Yeah, a lot of good, interesting characters. I have no idea how close they'll go to history, but you know, we don't watch these to actually learn anything. It's directed by James Samuels, another Brit, who is, and he directed another Western in 2013, They Die by Dawn. And I'll have the trailers for Harder They Fall and Miracle Workers, Oregon Trail, on the Roundup Facebook page tonight, and they'll be in next week's Roundup post.
Okay.
Oh, and finally, the great Walter Hill, writer-director of films like The Long Riders, Geronimo, Wild Bill, the pilot for Deadwood, Broken Trail, is making another Western.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's called Dead for a Dollar. It stars Christoph Waltz as a legendary bounty hunter and Willem Dafoe as, you guessed it, his sworn enemy.
Of course.
Of course. You got to have a sworn enemy.
Got to have one.
Well, Waltz, yeah. I've got more than I can handle.
Me too.
Well, Waltz is hired to go to Mexico and rescue the kidnapped wife of an important industrialist. And I hope it doesn't end up being as much of a remake of Richard Brooks' The Professionals as it sounds like. But even if it is, Walter Hill is a great talent and will do something wonderful with it.
Oh, absolutely.
And please check out the... Yeah, he's great, great stuff. And please check out the current True West magazine and my article interview with the delightful L.Q. Jones.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And you, yeah, you can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Very good. Hey, Henry, I have a question for you.
Okay.
A while back, we talked about 12 Westerns in 12 months. You remember that?
Yes, I sure do.
Did you see any of those?
I have three. I've seen the very first one.
And your opinion?
It was a very, very contained thing, almost like a picture on a submarine, in the sense that it was just three characters. And I found it interesting. I wasn't crazy about it, but I wanted to see a couple more. And as I said, I recently just got a couple more, and I don't want to pass judgment until I have a little better sense of it. Have you seen any?
I saw two of them. I think one of the ones I saw was the one with the three characters that you just mentioned. And the other one was about a stagecoach. And I, you know, their names are so funny. I can't quite remember the names of them, but as when you find them, they're introduced as one of the 12 movies and 12 Westerns in 12 months.
Right.
You go, wow. I mean, how good can they be? Well, they're not that bad, I guess.
Well, of course, you know, people at Republic were turning out, 36 Westerns in 12 months.
They were two. Yeah. And they were like 60 minutes or less.
Well, actually, we think that because when they first got sold to television, they all got cut down to 53 minutes.
That's
to
true.
Fit into an hour time slot. Yeah, when I've gotten the Gene Autry and Roy Rogers pictures and so on, when they've been rejuvenated and re-released, they tend to be 65 to 71 minutes, I find.
But they were short. They were only, three reelers, so they weren't really long.
Right. No, and they were tight. I mean, they didn't waste any time.
No.
As opposed to the PRC films that were the same length, and you thought you'd die of old age before they ended.
I would tend to agree.
Lash LaRue, hit somebody with that whip, please.
Oh, my God. You know, most of those were filmed down in Corriganville, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All those
three at a time.
And, oh, yeah. I mean, or Pioneer Town up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All righty.
We'll get you
have
that
a great
stuff
show.
Thank you. We'll get you that stuff in the mail tomorrow, and we'll talk to you in, I guess, August now, huh?
Wow.
Terrific.
You're
all right. Everyone have a great July.
You too as well. Have a great 4th, Henry. Stay safe.
You too. Thanks a lot,
okay.
Guys. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye.
Henry Park, one of our oldest and dearest friends, a good friend of the show, and been for years. And he does a little Wild West 5 minutes every month at the first Thursday of the month. And we always look forward to having Henry on with us. Well, tonight, guys, it's Cowboy Night. More specifically, it's U.S. Marshal / Texas Ranger Night. Hot diggity dog. This gentleman is ex-law enforcement. He is currently works for law enforcement up in Arlington, Texas, about, an hour south of the Red River and on the way into Oklahoma, which incidentally, the only reason Texas is there is to keep the water off of Oklahoma. So we know that to be a fact. Anyway, I'd like to, without any further ado, I just want to bring this guy in because I really want him to talk about this book that he's written. And please welcome to the Writer's Block with a huge round of applause, Mr. John Lane. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing real well tonight. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, hey, we're very welcome to have you. We're lucky to have you.
Thank you.
And the Red River Rendezvous is the latest.
Reunion.
I'm sorry. Red River Reunion is your latest home. Goes along with Gunslingers, which was your first one.
Correct.
And I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about the novel and your protagonist, if you wouldn't mind. And while you're doing that, we're going to go ahead and poke Richard and wake him up.
All right.
I'm here.
Well, Red River Reunion takes place in the fall of 1877 up here in North Texas and the Indian Territory, current day Oklahoma, of course, and along the Red River, like the title suggests. And the reunion part of the title, I've had a number of folks ask me about that. And what prompts the reunion in the book are the two main characters, the U.S. Deputy Marshal out of Fort Smith, Arkansas, and my primary protagonist is Luxton Danner. He's a college-educated fellow, originally from Charleston, South Carolina, via Pennsylvania, the Union Army, and some other things along the way. And my other character, other primary character, or his sidekick, if you will, is Wes Payne, who is a Texas Ranger now, again, in Red River Reunion. And he's pretty much based out of Fort Griffin area in Buffalo Gap, Texas. And these two characters, unbeknownst to each other initially, they get dispatched to some settlements along the Texas side of the Red River that are constantly being raided by outlaw gangs that would cross the Red River, which is a rather relatively easy thing to do because it's pretty shallow in many places and such. And of course, on the Texas side, that's where the settlements were. That's where the people were. There was money. There were goods and such. So the outlaws would cross over the Red River. They'd raid these settlements and then they'd flee back into the Indian Territory because there wasn't any law or law enforcement over there outside of the U.S. Marshals out of Fort Smith that would run warrants and so forth up in that territory. And all that is historically factual. This was actually happening in 1877. And in my story, Governor Hubbard of Texas sends a ranger and the Western District from an order by the president actually sends a U.S. deputy marshal. Really, it's supposed to be on a reconnaissance mission more than let's take everything into our own hands and try and solve the problem. But the fellas are a bit flamboyant and it goes off from there.
Okay. I have to say that's an interesting read. Bobby, I know you finished it. And Richard, I know you finished it. Mm-hmm. And I gave John my take already on his book. I'm going to have Bobby, why don't you say what your thoughts are on Red River Reunion?
Hi, John. I found it to be a very engaging read. When I first opened it and saw that it was about 400 pages, I thought, oh, this is like reading two Westerns, a little bit longer than I anticipated. But I was fully engaged. I had to make myself a little list of characters. A lot of them have last names that start with a D. And you introduce them with their full names, and then, you know, we pretty much get their last names. And I was getting confused between some of the good guys and some of the bad guys.
Sure.
And so it's a pretty big cast. I found it very enjoyable. And you write really good descriptions. We have a lot of gunplay and a lot of skirmishes and a lot of opportunities with these two main characters kind of out on the trail and running into different things. They each have something very unique. One has damaged hands and one has nightmares. And I thought that was very interesting. You want to talk a little bit about maybe how you came up with that and how they shape these characters?
Certainly.
John, I'm going to stop you right there.
Yes, sir.
Don't go away. We need to run a real quick ad, and then we'll be right back with you. You're listening to LA Talk Radio's very own Writer's Block, and we'll be back with you just after this brief message from LA Talk Radio. Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says be a host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say, and if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com, and listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. And we are back with our guest tonight, Mr. John Lane, of course, Bobby Jean Bell and Richard Polinelli, and myself. And we are talking about characters. And we've been asking, Bobby Jean asked the question, or I believe asked the question, or stated the question. of the And I interrupted John in his answer. So if you want to call and talk to John, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. See, Bobby, you thought I was going to do it through you. Nah, see? I don't even have it written down anymore. I remembered it. It's 323-203-0815, and you can call and you can talk directly to Mr. John Lane tonight right here on LA Talk Radio's Writer's Blog. Okay, John, take it away.
Sure. Bobby had asked about two unique features of my characters. One unique feature of each character. The U.S. Deputy Marshal Luxton Danner has a problem with nightmares. He and they're very real to him to the point where he actually acts out physically at times. And Bobby, I can tell you that. And this is the first time that I'm ever stating this in any of my public appearances or interviews, and there's been quite a few already, thank goodness. But really, those nightmares are based on personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
I'm as James had said early on, I'm a 40-year veteran of law enforcement, and along the way, I've had the opportunities, some good, some not so good, to be involved in some, you know, very critical situations in that. And, you know, on occasion, they'll come back and haunt me at times. So when I was creating Luxton Danner, it was really a no-brainer for me to have him. Not that Luxton is based on my career or based on me personally. He's really not. But that particular attribute of him comes right from me. And when I write those sequences, it's pretty easy for me to do that, because a couple of them actually are sequences that I actually experience. Now, with regard to Wes Payne, my Texas Ranger, him having the damaged hands, there's a backstory to Wes Payne. And I actually wrote that as a short story and had that published. And it's actually available, I believe, on my website still. The name of the story is Presidio, and it takes place down in Mexico and Presidio County down there on the southern southern border of Texas in the Rio Grande. And in that backstory, Wes is pursuing Mexican bandidos, and he's captured. And they basically nail him to the side of a building. And that is how he ends up with damaged hands. And in subsequent story, the damage of the hands where he cramps up and his hands go into this grotesque position like I describe as a claw, that's really, you know, what we know today in modern medicine as scar tissue that is building up in his hands. But back in 1877, it's not that they didn't have, you know, for the times, they had some very good medical people because of the Civil War and so forth. But they're just now starting to, and I say just now in 1877, the doctors are starting to get an idea as to what's going on. And that actually is explored a little further in book number 3 that is written but has not been released yet.
Thank you.
Okay. Richard, do you have anything?
Well, you answered 2 of the questions I had, so I'm just going to jump to the third one.
All right.
I really was drawn to Danner for a couple of reasons. He's very similar to a character I wrote that Jim and I did together.
Okay.
But I wanted to kind of – this poor guy is trying to get from Fort Smith down to range, and along the way he comes across a family that's stupid enough to try to travel – this route when alone.
Yes.
Then he's got to save another group that is can't hit the broadside of a barn from 2 feet away. And then he gets saddled with this 18-year-old girl who wants to run away from her dad. I don't doubt that by the end of the book, this guy's ready to shoot everybody. I would be myself. But with Danner, there's a incident that kind of makes him think he's at the end of the road for his career. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, I don't know if you're still active in law enforcement or not. Is that coming from you or maybe a colleague that one case, that one death, that one incident was, okay, I can't do this anymore?
Absolutely. That to answer your question, it comes both from personal feelings and from that of numerous fellow officers from over the years that have been in a critical situation and have felt at least some decided that was it, and mm-hmm. others you know were able to work through it and continue to march on and move on. But yes, sir, that was both easy for me to write and difficult for me to write, if you know what I mean. And as a fellow writer, I'm sure you do, and the writers out there listening, it was an emotional time for Danner and also for me writing it. And I've had a number of fans that have contacted me about what you're talking about. Yeah. And they really want to discuss that scene, that situation, and why that played out the way it did.
Yeah. Well, for that time, what happened, and I'm not going to do spoilers, but, you know, we know because we read the thing. That was pretty horrific.
Yes.
for that young woman to have that happen.
Yes.
And, you know, for us modern day, maybe not so much, but we have our own special little horrors now that we deal with. And I know a lot of law enforcement people, and I don't know that I could handle some of the stuff you guys see. So I was just wondering if, you know, if that was coming from that aspect for you.
Yes.
Yeah, I never mentioned this when we talked earlier, John, but this book is slightly reminiscent of the book that Richard and I wrote called The Last Lonely Trail. And it is about a Texas Ranger, and it is about a U.S. Marshal. And they happen to hook up chasing these, 13 guys?
13 men.
13 men, and neither one of them are dead set on bringing anybody back breathing.
Yeah.
And the repartee between the two, as it grows begrudgingly, and believe me, it's begrudgingly, that they finally have gotten to the point where they're not screaming at each other and calling each other names. you know, and making nasty comments about each other.
Right.
But it was reminiscent of that particular book, and I appreciated that part a lot because, I mean, it's not only is it hard to write buddy stories, but it's especially hard to write a buddy story when your buddy's right the other half. So
I have not experienced that yet, but maybe sometime in the future.
You know, it's an experience, believe me. And if you really take it to heart, and like Richard and I did, he would send me 2 or 3 chapters, and I would go and read his 2 or 3 chapters to get the feel of where he was going, and then start my 2 or 3 chapters that way. And so it was a seamless transition between characters and between chapters. So
between writers, because nobody's yet told me what chapters I wrote and what chapters you wrote.
I know they can't figure it out.
Yeah.
But he wrote the chapters with Marshal David Crockett Hall, and I wrote the chapters with actually Texas Ranger John Barclay Armstrong, who was a real Texas Ranger. In fact, in 1877, he went to Florida and brought back John Wesley Hardin.
Oh, very good.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's reminiscent of it in this book I'm writing now about Armstrong. So it's, which is a working title, Ranger. So, but anyway, you did a really good job of descripting, but I have to say that you can't read your bad guys without a program. It's really hard. It's really hard.
And they have aliases in a couple pieces, and yeah. Sometimes they're called the one name, and I only, because I began to keep a list, is like, oh, wait a minute, now he's called this other name. That's a guy.
Maybe we should include an index and know which bad guys won.
Prep a scorecard on the back of the book.
Good guy, bad guy.
I know, huh? Stinky, and you know.
You surprised me with the spy, who was in the town. So you know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I did not see that guy coming as being the spy. So that was good.
I was a little surprised by the 6 nuns getting out of the back of the wagon.
Well, and I kind of wondered when they first came on the scene if they were really what they thought they were, or were they going to be the new, you know, brothel? So I was sort of, you know, holding my breath for what's the real story on those folks.
I thought they were going to be the new painted ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of wondered. It was a long book. I thought, you know, there's going to be more to their story.
Oh, that was not an Easter egg that you dropped. So,
yeah. Well, that you know, those characters, those sisters, that's all based on historical fact. Also, that the research that I had done for Red River Reunion included the church was pretty much in Texas back then. It was based out of Galveston. Mainly because that was the primary port, and that's where they got off the boat, and that's where they stayed. And so the church started to spread, you know, westward and northward from Galveston, and really primarily this particular religious group, you know, was centered around San Antonio, of course, at the time, and so forth. But in that particular year, 77, 78, that particular time, the church was actively sending these nuns and deacons and occasionally priests out into the Wild West.
Yes,
and saying, go spread the good word.
Established churches.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it didn't always end well.
No, it didn't. And they did it in Arizona. They did it in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And it didn't end very well ever.
Yeah. That's correct.
Speaking of, I was kind of happy with the deacon's story, how it went and ended.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
All right.
I can't say anything more without spoilers.
No.
Okay, we have to take another real quick break, but keep the grin up, John, because your time's coming. We are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back after a brief word from Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other 6 or 7. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books?
See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published, and right now we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books. Hi, we're back, and we have a caller. Hi, you're on the air with LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, my name is Rachel.
Hello, Rachel. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Did you want to have a comment for John?
Yeah, I actually have a quick comment and then a question at the end.
Okay.
So, Mr. Lane, I just wanted to tell you how much I've absolutely loved your novels. I've read both of them. I've actually started rereading them. I really enjoyed Gunslingers and the strong imagery in your writing. That's, I think, one of the greatest things about reading is being able to visualize what's happening while you read it. Along with the strong female character, I really, really enjoyed it. Now, with Red River Reunion, that's actually one of my favorite books of all time. I'm in love with it. I can't wait to dive back into it for a second time. Something I did want to ask you, though, I am in love with Danner and Payne. I love their character development, not only individually, but with each other and their friendship. Were they always destined to be friends, or was that something that just came up while writing? How did that relationship kind of come about?
That is a good question.
Really good question.
Well, thank you, Rachel, for the call and the comments. I really appreciate that. That makes me feel fantastic, believe me. Reference the relationship with Luxton Danner and Wes Payne. Actually, Wes Payne was never a character that I had planned on appearing in my books. When I was writing Gunslingers, the first book, I did not know of a character named Wes Payne and the Texas Ranger connection. I did not have that. And I was about, I don't know, about halfway, I guess, a third to the halfway point of the book when I was writing a chapter that I had pretty much, decided on.
Uh-oh.
All of a sudden, Wes Payne and I just the way he entered into the scene and the way that things played out, all of a sudden, I thought, oh, I really like this guy. I want to keep this fellow around. And so I had him kind of tag along for a while as I was contemplating how or if I was going to keep him engaged in the story. And I love the character so much that he's now an integral part of the series.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for
awesome.
The call,
Thank
Rachel.
You.
We appreciate it so
You're
much.
Welcome.
Hey, John, now getting off your book a little bit, let's talk about writing in general. I found, and Richard has found, that sometimes minor characters, especially when they're well-written and well thought out, minor characters become major characters.
Sure.
And that happened with me and Jeff Stryker and Bobby Malloy. It happened with Richard and some of the characters. Oh, and Escaping Infinity, for sure. seems to me most writers that write a sequel or write part two and three and four always have a minor character that they promote to major status.
Yeah, that's really, as I just explained, that really is kind of what happened with Wes. I decided I wanted this character to intervene in that particular scene, in that chapter. And then I started liking that character so much. And as I mentioned, I had him tag along a little bit as I was trying to decide, was I going to promote this character to a primary character, or was I, going to go in a different direction with him? And obviously I did, because now he's a major character in book two, Red River Reunion, what we're talking about tonight. So he definitely, you know, fits that mold that you're talking about. Absolutely.
Okay. Where did these stories obviously come from someplace? Westerns are not exactly the hottest genre on the planet these days. I think they are recovering somewhat, and I think Bobby Jean would agree.
Yeah.
The Western stories are starting to grab vogue again, mostly because it's the major character developments that we're getting in these new books and new writers such as yourself. This story came from what part of your imagination, or did you pick it and pull it from your Ronan's telling me we have to wrap up on time. Did you pick it and pull it from experiences that you had, or was it strictly your imagination?
I would say that it's a combination of both, but primarily, as we discussed previously, I grew up with the Western genre. I'm just old enough to remember Saturday and Sunday afternoons not being filled with football, but being filled with Western movies and Western television shows. And I feel very fortunate that both my mother and my father very much enjoyed the Western and the Western genre. So that's really what I grew up with, primarily. We did see some other things, but, you know, we only had the one television in the house when I was young. So whatever Mom and Dad decided to watch, you know, we all watched. And
sure.
So these stories really do come from my imagination, the creativity. Is drawn from 1,000 different experiences, 1,000 different visions that I've had in the Western genre. And then, as I mentioned, I've sprinkled in some personal experiences with you know, my two main characters when I think that I can and when I believe it's appropriate.
Okay. I remember the 13-inch black and white TV, incidentally.
Mm-hmm.
We had a month. And it was a rabbit ears, and you had to wiggle them. And then my dad would go up and slap the side of the TV every now and then.
Dial in the channel with the little thing on the outer
right. That's right.
And
it had VHF and UHF, and you could never get the UHF channels.
No.
Didn't matter what you did.
No.
Anyway, I too grew up with the Westerns, and so did Richard.
And
we're all old guys here. Well, and
so who is your favorite? Who is your favorite Western writer?
Oh, good question.
Boy, you know, my first thought is to go with the comfortable selection and say L'Amour.
Uh-huh.
But I tell you what, I really, really like Robert B. Parker and his Virgil Cole and Hitch series. I know he had two genres that he was popular for. He was probably more popular for his detective series, Spencer. Yeah. But I really liked his stories. I really was impressed with the relationship that Cole and Hitch had and so forth. And I hope that I can create something a fraction of as good as Parker did with those two characters with Danner and Payne.
Okay. I'm going to ask, Larry McMurtry fit in there anywhere?
Yeah, Larry, you know, when you talk about Larry McMurtry, I think of a grand, he's sort of in his own category, if you will. And boy, I don't know. I mean, I like most writers and particularly here in Texas and the Southwest, you know, just have a raving respect for him and so forth. But boy, he's on a different level. So when it comes to favorite writers, I just kind of put him in his own category, and I think more of L'Amour and Parker.
I totally get that. Yeah. There's a question we ask every one of our writers, and we're going to ask you that now. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you work your way out of it?
Wow. Well, the answer is yes. I've had writer's block, and for me, I've had different types of writer's block. I've had the type that most people, I think, when they hear about writer's block, they think of, well, I don't know what else to write. I don't know what to do here. I've reached a point where my brain is tired, my creativity is sagging, and I just I just can't go on right now, and uh-huh. and I need to deal with it. And usually when I have that situation, I just step away from it. And sometimes I'm away from it for a good portion of time, you know, a couple of weeks even.
Sure.
And so forth. But my mind is always churning on different scenes, different dialogue. I have a little bit over an hour drive to my day job. So I've got that time to think about different things and create characters and such. The other type of writer's block, or and I don't really know if it's writer's block, but I think it is I am writing, I am moving along, and I become a little bit confused on what do I want to do here? Where do I want to go? I find myself, and I call it the shotgun method. Some other literary folks call it the bubble method, method of writing and that sort of thing, which I do not do. I'm a linear guy, shocking with my, you know, my history and so forth. I like everything in its place and such. I'm kind of rigid with that. So I tried writing the shotgun or bubble method, and that didn't work for me at all. I start with the beginning and I write chapter one, and then I go to two and so forth. But I will find myself kind of getting away from that linear mode, if you will, and I start drifting some, and then I have to stop. And for me, now I'm sort of losing focus on what am I looking at right here and now. Gotcha. And I start thinking of some other things. And in that regard, I sort of solve that by setting aside my linear writing, and I'll take some notes and so forth, sometimes 2, 3, 4 pages of notes. And something that I'll leave for later. I don't write a chapter. I don't do anything like that. And then, you know, I'll go back and I'll revisit it. And I'll find it sometimes, most times, I'll find a place in the book, maybe a little bit later on, where that will fit. But I have a drawer full of notes that in three books, because book three has been written, they never made it in. It was like, no, that just was not going to work. It wasn't going to fit. And maybe sometime down the calendar, I'll be able to write about that.
Gotcha. We got to take another real quick break, and we'll be back. And this is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we'll be right back after this brief word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know, there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge. Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
And we are back with our guest, Mr. John Lane. Of course, Richard is here. Bobby Jean is here, although she's looking a bit fuzzy. She's having bandwidth issues, so
yeah,
we won't be talking to her for a while. Anyway, we're running out of time here, John. So in the brief time we've got left, what advice would you give to a writer just starting out?
Well, what I would give there is to definitely give it a try. Okay, I've talked with a lot of individuals who just, they tell me right out, boy, I don't know how you wrote one book, let alone three. And you're working on, you know, 4 and 5 and so forth. I don't think I could write one. And I try and be encouraging and so forth. And I let those folks know that, well, you know, it is a lot of work. You know, Gunslingers took me 3 years of research before it ever went to print. But that just happened to be me, my method and so forth. And so I tell folks, I said, no, you know, start putting your thoughts together, decide how you want to do it. Maybe you need an outline. Maybe you're like me and you just start writing. It just depends. But I also encourage people to, if they have the opportunity, take a creative writing class, whether it's at the college level, at the community ed level. I don't care what level it's at. I did that, and it was an eye-opening experience for me. And as a matter of fact, at the end of the first writing course that I took, it was titled very simply, The 10 Things Every Writer Should Know. And it was actually more like 100 things in the class. But chapter one of Gunslingers was the assignment, the written assignment that I had for that class at the end. They said, write a 1,500, word chapter. Tell me what you want to say. And of course, it was rewritten multiple times later. That doing that really catapulted me in the direction that I needed. So I strongly encourage people to do that.
Excellent. And John, unfortunately, we are out of time. So if you wouldn't mind giving our listeners your email and your website and whatever it is that you'd like them to have.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been an honor and a pleasure. I truly mean that. And I hope to talk with you all again. I can be reached at johnlanefiction.com. That's L-A-Y-N-E, like John Wayne, only with an L. That's johnlanefiction.com. That's my website. Labrador Publishing, just like the dog, labradorpublishing.com is my publisher, and you can find me there also. I'm also on Facebook at johnlanefiction.com when you search for me on Facebook. And I have a brand new presence now on Instagram, johnlane.writer at Instagram. Okay. And that .writer is also my email address.
Excellent.
johnlane.writer@gmail.com. You can find me all of those places.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Title of the new book, John?
The title of the new book is Return to Canyon Creek.
Wow. Okay, we'll look forward to it. And your book, of course, Gunslingers and Red River Reunion, both available on Amazon and online booksellers and through the publisher, Labrador Publishing, and through your website, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. That is correct. I'm available everywhere.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real, real honor to have you. And good luck to your new stories, and we'll be talking again sometime.
I certainly hope so. Thanks, Richard, James, and Bobby. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks, y'all.
Good night, John.
Good night, John. Next week, we have a writer from, of course, Creative Edge. His ace, Antonio Hall. He's got a new book coming out, or a new book that's been out for a while, and we're going to be discussing that. I believe you both got that copy today.
Yes, we did.
And John was an interesting guy.
Yeah. I mean, it was
guy.
I kind of figured a lot of what he had gone through during his career was making its way into the book, just from the way things were going. Yeah.
Right. Well, we had a long talk before we hooked up with you guys, and
as we were sweating bullets, wondering where the two you were and how we were going to do a show. Yeah.
Well, I was here just on the other line.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's it for tonight for us and we hate to say this. Our engineer of 6 years is leaving us this week. Mr. Ronan Rosner, it's been an honor and a privilege to have you with us. You've been a great member of our team, and we will miss you greatly. And we will be back, of course, next week with the Writer's Block right here on LA Talk Radio. And for Ronan, the last time, for Bobby Jean, for Richard, myself, Jim Christina, and for Sam Hassan, the man who makes all of this possible in LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.